So, Father, what a wonderful, amazing name it is. What a powerful name it is. Thank you for this worship. Thank you for leading us. Be with us today. We give you our hearts now, because nothing can stand against your name. We pray for your blessing now over this team, over this place, in Jesus' name. Amen. Stephen, thank you. Chris, Stephen, all the team over there. Man, we should just continue with that all morning. What an amazing way to draw us into your presence. And so thank you for that. And for the way in which you are able to do that is just powerful. And make sure you're here tonight to see Brian. He's an amazing pastor, preacher. We heard him just a couple of months ago. We were at a conference with him, and he just brought a message that was deep and powerful. He's got a pastor's heart, and he can just bring it. So you're going to love Brian tonight. Whenever I see him, I remember the story about 4, 5, 6 years ago, something like that. He just draws things out of you. And so I was talking to him, and we just were getting ready for a board meeting, and I said, Brian, he goes, how you doing? You all right? And I said, Brian, I'm not sure I'm doing all that well. I kind of messed up today. And I said, my wife got a haircut today. And it was a lot shorter than I thought. And when she came home, I saw her and she said, what do you think? And I went, wow, okay. And I said, Brian, that was just the wrong answer. And it just was messed up. It's not good. And my wife walks up about 10 seconds later and Brian goes, I love your hair, Lisa.
Like, yeah, that's what you're supposed to say.
He's got such a confidence that he shares with you and keeps your prayers with him and your follies and your pains. Yeah. So today, as we look at some, be sure to be here tonight. Tonight and today, and for the rest of this week, I believe what you'll find is this opportunity to be at a place where Jesus is not only lifted up, but the opportunity for us to see each other together in fellowship is a great opportunity. I'll just want to show you a fast picture of what we're going to talk about today, flourishing families in a perishing world. And here's our family. Here's when we got married real quickly. Just wanted to pull that picture up. My favorite thing is this thing on Elisa's head. Man, that is Texas for you. She wears that like every other week just to, I come home sometimes and she's like looking at and wearing that thing. This is our family. That's Natalie and Neil in the middle at their wedding, and our daughter Caroline is there with us, and Drew and Julia. So it's just a fun place to be and to bring family. And so, but this is how it started off. Our first one, Drew, right there, kind of on the right side, had been married now about 3 years. But this is our favorite picture of Drew when he was little. He's got this kind of innocent, amazing look. His eyes. He just sits there and says, I'm going to be an easy baby. And you look at that. And then about, I don't know, we had this picture made. And about 2 weeks later, I came home. I said, Lise, have you ever noticed his finger right there? I'm not sure this is going to be an easy baby. And he gets married, and sure enough, right after they were married, our new in-laws came by one time. You know, there was a picture of Julia, his wife, when she was little. That's his wife. They're married. We don't want grandchildren. You keep them to yourself. That was hard enough right there. Yeah, raising kids is hard, and family camp and seeing the little ones, and it reminds me of the time, at least, where we were out there and we didn't have a lot of money, but one day we decided we had enough to buy one of these things right here. You know what these are? These are those kind of magic fire grills, and they just heat up everything, and it's gas, and it's awesome, and I built it. I put it together from the box. And as I put it together in the box, we had 4 and 5-year-old children at the time. And I decided I'm a teacher first and foremost. So I brought them over because it was going to sit on our patio. And as it sat on the patio, it was right where all their play stuff was. We lived in this little tiny place. I said, now come here, kids. I'm going to show you something. I had never even lit this thing. I just put it together. And I said, now, come here. This is not a toy. And you know when you use that dad voice? It's real serious. Like, come here, boy. And you too, girl. Come over here. I'm going to show you something. This is not a toy. I put this together a lot of time. And I said, I'm going to show you some buttons to never, ever touch. You never touch this red button right here. In fact, I'm going to show you what happens when you do. But let me show you what else you don't do. Now, I'm not sure why I did that, but I'm just saying, see this button right here? This turns on the gas. You don't want to do this. This on, bad, off, good. You don't want to do this. And I kept doing that with the lid shut. And so like a good teacher, I'm reiterating the whole time. Now, this is not good. This turns on the gas. You hear that? Psh, yeah, that's not good. You come get daddy if that ever happens. I kept showing him then. Now I said, now I want you to come here. I'm going to light this for the first time. And I want you to watch me do this. So come real close and lean in and watch as I push this big red button, something I don't ever want you to do. Remember, gas on, off. And I lift that thing just like this, and I push that red button, and a fireball the size of our city hits all three of us, and it completely singed our face and our hair, and it threw us back, and we stood there, and Elisa comes running and says, what did you do? And I'm like, that look, and they're like, mama. Lashes were burned off of us. My eyebrows used to be blonde. And the kids are standing there, and they said, what happened? They go, mama, don't ever touch that red button. See, that's messed up.
They like have panic attacks every time we barbecue.
Now. Yeah, no hamburgers, no hot dogs. Last night was rough for them. What we're going to cover this weekend, it's just such a joy to be here. Elisa and I get to do this on a regular basis, teaching classes on relationships and being able to talk to people about how you do things well. And one of the things is, it's just through the messed up times, the things that you don't always do well, that are great learning opportunities, that are also places in which you capture something. In fact, one of the things we're going to talk about this weekend are not only these ideas that come from us, from God's Word, the foundation of everything we do, these biblical truths. It's amazing what we can find in there that is so relevant today. We're going to spend a lot of time in John, in particular John 13. The reason we're going to spend some time there is because once you get to 13 in John, something amazing happens. John does a switch. For the first 12 chapters, he used the word love, I don't know, maybe 6-7 times. There wasn't many. He talked about love a lot. But in chapters 13, and then for the next four chapters, 13, 14, 15, 16, 5 chapters, 17, he talks about love 31 different times. He's made this transition, and he starts by saying to his disciples at the Last Supper, something amazing. We're going to talk about that today. I'm a psychologist. I'm a social psychologist, scientist. So I'm going to talk about some relevant research, some science, and some things that we get to do with our students and things we get to explore and study and go do some research on. Currently, we're doing some research on the topic of grace and its impact on marriage. And we got to spend some time out at Cambridge University just about a year ago now. And we were studying and looking at this topic of what does grace mean? Can you study grace? Is it different than things like mercy and forgiveness? Is it different than things like gratitude? It seems to be similar. But how does it play out in people's lives? How does it play out in families? So we'll talk about graceful families, but also loving families. We'll talk about relevant research and then some practical applications. And so for the next four times that we're up here, including today, we're going to give you some ways in which you can become what John 13 sets forth. And that is a family who makes a difference in the lives of people who don't know him. You see, it's about your family making a difference in the lives of people that don't know him. It's about your kids being able to make something, a statement to the world, by the way you love each other. That's John 13. That's John 13 through 17. That's the gospel. Is can we lead others or show others by the way we act and the things that we do and the way we treat each other? can that point us to something more powerful and deep? You see, is your family really about making yourself happy and having a fun family life and peace and contentment and joy? I think it is. But if it's there and it stops there, it's not enough. You see, your family needs to be about something that points to something farther, bigger, deeper, right? That's what your family needs to be able to do. How do you do that? We're going to give some practical applications in doing this. So let me ask you this. Turn and talk to somebody around you as you think about this question right now. And here's the question. Are there any families that you admire? Are there any families that you respect, maybe you look up to? And I want you to think about, why are the reasons why you look up to them? Think about a family. Maybe it's a couple. Maybe it's some kids. Maybe it's just some neighbors or somebody in your own family that you admire and respect. I want you to turn to somebody around you and talk about, maybe here's what first came to mind when I heard that question, the reasons why, and then share that with your neighbor. Take about 2-3 minutes, anybody around you, however many you want. Take about 1 minute. Real quickly, let's do this. I know you're still sharing. There'll be other opportunities. In fact, we're going to build in one or two of these throughout the mornings. But let me ask you this. Somebody raise your hand. Did something come to mind? Maybe some reason, a family that you admire, respect? What was it? I imagine I could guess at some of these, but I didn't want to share something that stood out. Was it anything that stood out about their behavior or about their life? What was it? Anybody have something that stood out to you? A family that you admire? Yeah. So there's a family. We go to church together with Peter back there, and he mentions a family that they stand out because of what? Yeah. He said the patience they have with their 11 children. That's an admirable thing. And if you ought to see him, he just sits there as a very patient man. He's someone to admire, the way he treats and loves on 11 children. Okay, what else? Yeah. So when these children turned to adolescents, and then they now wanted to share a room because they liked each other so much or got along so well. How often does that happen? You see, I'm like, yeah, how often? Some move to different houses when they turn into adolescents. I want kids in different houses. Anybody else? So it's things that we see. Yes. There seems to be love and laughter and fun banter together. Something that we admire and respect like that. At least, why don't we read and why don't we talk about what John says?
These will be our key verses that we're focusing on this week. So John 13:1, and then we'll skip down to 34 and 35, and it says this: having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. And a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. Because this is the key. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. If you have love for one another, that's how people know who your Lord is, who your Savior is, who your Master is. By how you look at the person next to you, the person you came with to camp. And the way you treat that person, the way you love them, is how the world's going to know that you love Jesus. And so think about, what is that saying back and forth? Why is that so important? What's so important about that?
I think as we were talking about this, the word know stood out. And will all people know? We've been thinking about that. What does it mean that all people will know? What does it mean to know? How do we come to decide what somebody is like? How do we decide what a neighbor is like? Have you ever met somebody and within like the first 5 seconds you could tell if you're going to like them or not? You forgot their name after they shared it, but you kind of get a sense that I like this person. They seem something. What is it that we see in them? How do we know? Do you see some people and you think, that, there's something there? Do you know it's built into us? Do you know that the capacity to figure out when Jesus says, all people will know that you are my disciples, it's because humans have a built-in capacity by which they are able to discern and know something about you. You see, we live a world internally in our heads, in our minds, and we think our thoughts and we're there. But all along, we are communicating by our actions to other people. And Jesus says, this is the way people are going to know that you are my disciples. That's an amazing statement. Do you know what that, for me as a social psychologist, I keep thinking about the word know. How does this come about? How does it look? And then I ask this question, why is that so important? Why was it so critical? Now remember all that just happened in 13. He said, I'm going to love you to the end. When I was looking at the Bible, you had marked that down with the word wow. Because he says, here's how you do it. You remember what else he did between 1 and 34 and 35? He washed the disciples' feet at the Last Supper. And he says, now a new commandment I give you. This is how you love. You come alongside and you serve. And you do it not by your words as much as by your actions. And that's how people are going to know. So I think this is important for a number of reasons. It's because the world takes notice of families that love well. I believe the world takes notice of families that love well. See, let me just tell you real quickly. I'll share a little bit more maybe tomorrow or Thursday about my story. And it's just a brief story. But I just simply grew up not knowing Jesus. I have 5 brothers. All of us lived in a home that were just marginal. Well, we weren't even marginal. We were bad Catholics. We went to church like 3 times in my whole life. We were just not a Christian family, so to speak. But there was a sense that we knew God. But all that to say, in college, everything changed when I met the King and Lord of all. It all changed. And what I began to do was look at the people around me. The guy that led me to the Lord and shared the gospel with me was married. And I watched him because I didn't have anybody else to watch. When Lisa was growing in her faith, she watched people around her as well.
Yeah, my father was not a believer, but my mom was. So my mom had us in church all the time. And they didn't have a very good marriage. And, when you grow up with it, you don't really realize it, kind of the extent of it, when you're living it in the middle of it, until you get around somebody who does it very differently. And I was on a college trip. We were on a bus going to Utah to build a church, our college group. And there was a couple that worked with a college group that brought their whole family on this trip. And they had no idea that the whole trip, I was intrigued by the way they talked to each other. I was intrigued by the way they held hands, this couple, when they walked. I was intrigued by the way they treated their children and how their children responded to them, because that was so foreign to me in a sense. And they had no idea that I was watching them. Could somebody be watching you? That you may never know. I think to this day, that couple has no idea the impact that they had on my life, because it gave me hope that it could be different.
Yeah.
And it gave me inspiration. I will do it differently. And I'm going to end. And I chose differently. And it really impacted my family to this day.
We've been talking about this for a while, what it means to be a family that loves the Lord, what it means to be a family. And it sounds as if the thing that it stood out most to us was this nonverbal behavior, this thing that it's not because you preach well. We did studies looking at teachers who were really good. We did this massive study. We looked at a bunch of different universities, and we wanted to find out which teachers at Christian universities had the biggest impact on students. And it was never because the students would say, oh, this teacher had the biggest impact on me because they had amazing theories. Oh, they knew their material. They were able to kind of come up with some cool things. It was the way they lived their life in front of people. But mostly it was the way in which they talked and sat there and lived out a life that was extremely authentic with what they were talking about. You see, they stand in stark contrast with your behavior here. Your family should be able to say this message to those that are looking on. Here is something different, unique, special. It's not your words. It's your behavior. Something to pay attention to. I want to show you a video. This captures for me what it means to do something, to live like Jesus lives by your behavior and your actions. So it's at a basketball game, and you'll figure it out in just a minute what's going on. It's just so cool. It's on the road, CBS specials with Steve Hartman. But I love this clip.
And I know you guys get tired of me. It's little things.
Coach Peter Morales of the Coronado High School Thunderbirds in El Paso, Texas, makes no qualms about it. Okay. He has a favorite on this team.
Mitchell, I need you. I need you to help me out with my coaching tits, Mitchell.
Team manager Mitchell Marcus has a developmental disability.
One, two, three, man!
But he far surpasses everyone here when it comes to love of the game.
He's this amazing person that our basketball team loves being around.
Yay!
Mitchell's mom, Amy, says he's always been that way.
Mitchell always had a basketball. That was always what he wanted for his birthday.
And because basketball is that important to him, on the last game of the regular season, the coach told Mitchell to suit up.
What was it like to put on the uniform?
I was very happy.
I imagine you were.
Just wearing a jersey was enough for Mitchell. But what he didn't know, what no one knew at the time, was that the coach planned to play him at the end, no matter what the score.
You were prepared to lose that game?
For his moment, yes. For his moment in time, yes.
And so, with a minute and a half left, Coronado leading, but only by 10, Coach Morales put in his manager.
And just started hearing Mitchell, Mitchell,
Mitchell, Mitchell.
But here's where the fairy tale fell apart. Although his teammates did everything they could to get Mitchell a basket, each time they passed him the ball, he either missed the shot or, like on their last possession, booted it out of bounds, turning the ball over to the other team with just seconds left.
He wasn't going to be able to score. But I was hoping that he was happy that he was just put in the game.
Could you have ever imagined what happened next?
No, I did. I could not. Not at all.
What happened next happened on the inbound. The guy with the ball there is a senior at Franklin High School, number 22, Jonathan Montañez.
I was raised to treat others how you want to be treated. Just thought Mitchell deserved his chance, deserved his opportunity.
I think I'll cry about it for the rest of my life.
What Jonathan did was yell out Mitchell's name, then threw the ball right to him, right there. One of the most memorable turnovers of all time. It wasn't the game-winning shot. When the buzzer sounded, Coronado had 15 more points than Franklin. But Jonathan's assist and Mitchell's basket did change the outcome decidedly. Play any game with this much sportsmanship. Both teams win. Steve Hartman, on the road in El Paso, Texas.
Yikes. It's an amazing thing. I don't know about you, but it chokes me up every time I see it. Why does it choke anybody up? Why does it choke you up? Did he stand up there and preach an amazing message on Luke 6:31? Did Jonathan Montañez do anything by his words that inspired you? Or was it simply a demonstration of something that was in his heart, something he learned from his parents, and something he did, wasn't it? Did you see his teammate when he threw the ball in? The teammate in black, Jonathan's teammate, he threw it in, and his teammate stood over there and went like, "What are you doing? I'm right here. He's on the other team." He stood there and he went like, "What'd you do that for?" It's just an amazing moment in time for us when we think about somebody who thinks about other people that way. What does it mean to be a family that loves well? That's what it means. This is what I want my kids. Wouldn't you, how many would say this, if my kid did that? Oh, and I don't have to smack him so many times. Love your neighbor. Treat him well. Go love that person. It's just so awesome that this kid, just on his own, at that moment, in the moment of the biggest moment in need, he went, "This is important to other people." What does that say? He was thinking about other people. So what happens is this. Can we tell the difference between someone who says they love and someone who actually does love? It's a hard question for a lot of us. Can we actually tell the difference between someone who says they love well and someone who actually does? In fact, we could do this so well that we are built this way. What I mean by that is we have a capacity, a designed brain that does something really, really intriguing. It is designed to pick up the difference between people who say they love well and people who do love well. You see, I think this comes back to John 13. You will know, all people will know, that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. They will know. And so in doing so, God knew something. Jesus knew something when he said it. He knew that he designed your brains to pick up the difference between people who say and people who do, and the inauthenticity or the authenticity, the connection between them. Research shows that our brains are actually wired to know the difference. Here's where I love being a social psychologist and a scientist. I love that because you know that we have an amazing capacity to detect authenticity and deception. You can do it. All you have to do is practice it. It's not like lawyers or police officers or the FBI or somebody in the Secret Service do this all that better than you and I do, or screeners at the airport. It's just that they practiced and thought about it because your brains are designed the same way, and that is to detect the difference between what a person is saying and their nonverbal actions. That's, by the way, that's the basis of lie detection. If you want to look at and be a good detector of authenticity, which you already are, it's the difference between somebody's acting one way and speaking another. That's why Jesus was so strong with the Pharisees. He said, why? You're like whitewashed tombs. You say this, but your behavior, your actions toward other people are anything but loving. We have a built-in detector of authenticity and deception. You ever seen babies do this right away? Take a little baby that's maybe a couple of months old or a year old, and they're playing with a toy. And if they're playing with this toy, and if they're sitting there just enjoying it, and as an adult, you'll sometimes come over and mess with them and hold up their hands like this. What does that baby do when you do that? That baby has a built-in detector about who you are, and that baby, most oftentimes, as soon as you cover up their hands, they're going to look at you, and they're going to look like, are you being nice or are you a bad man? And that baby looks at your behavior and goes, oh, they see a smile, and they go, you're a good man. You're funny. I like you. Now give me my toy. But they see this thing in you and they pick it up from the beginning. When they come out of the womb, we find one thing we can't stop them from focusing on if given the opportunity, and that's your eyes, your face. The human eye and the human face is more attractive to an infant than almost anything else we can put in front of them. Why? It's because that's a capacity for us to detect people. And to know their behavior. Are you smiling when you do this? When you cover up, are you laughing? You see a kid when they fall and they're walking for the first time and they're toddling around and they fall. New parents always go, oh no, are you okay? And the kid looks like, no, I'm not. They're looking at your face like, it's bad, huh? This is bad. And so new parents make that mistake like once. The next time they fall, they're like, good job. That was an awesome slide, kid. Way to go. And they're like, they look at you. How should I feel right now? Because I'm hurting. You're like, good job. I'm like, yeah, that was good. That was good. We have this amazing capacity. It's built in. The other way and evidence for this is in a unique line of studies for people who have lost sight. And in one particular case, there are a number of cases like this, but one that is fascinating for us in looking at the brain, just real quickly, is from patient X who lost his sight due to a series of strokes that he had. He had a series of strokes, and they just simply shut off his vision. Now, his eyes were normal. The back of his brain, perfectly normal. But the strokes wiped out that connection that goes between them. So he was blind with an amazing, amazing exception. And the exception was if you put somebody in front of him, even a person in a picture who is making an emotion and you put it in front of him, he couldn't see it. Remember, he's blind. But if you asked him the emotion on the face of the person in the picture or in front of him, he could guess the emotion on the face. He couldn't see it. That's God's design. You see, God created us with this capacity that we are now learning about, in which we have two pathways to vision. The first pathway, the high road, got wiped out by these series of strokes. He couldn't see. He's blind. But what's left intact, what God has done, is he's created us with this capacity called the low road, a different system in which vision, the eyes were still working fine, but this pathway was gone. But the lower pathway, which goes to this part of our brain called the amygdala, which processes nonverbal information, and it extracts emotional meaning from people's faces, was still intact. God, in you and in me, put this low road capacity for us to extract from other people authenticity, emotion in their face, a grimace, a frown, a smile. That's not only amazing, it's humbling. Because we can rarely hide what we truly feel from people. When I said that about Elisa's hair, I knew I messed up by her look, which said, please don't ever do that again. And she looked at me and I went, oh, yeah, well, say, hey, it's good, I like your hair, I'm sorry, that was a bad reaction. But what happens is we have this very quick, fast way of looking, and Patient X demonstrates that that capacity is there. It's a pathway we all have. It's a pathway that says and picks out things from people. That's an amazing thing. To me, this, as we look at John 13 and we look at our capacity to love and that all people will know, it's because we are built this way, to know when people truly do give God glory or truly do love somebody and love them well. So this week we're going to talk about, how do we love well? Do you know one of the biggest things and one of the best ways that we know that you're a loving family, there is something that you do. Loving families do more than almost any other family. There is something they do, and I think you're going to be surprised at what it is. I'll give you a hint right now. They have very firm beliefs with one other critical, important variable. They have strong convictions. Families that love well have strong convictions with one important ingredient. Without this ingredient, you have a family that no one really likes. What's that ingredient? I want you to think about it for just a second. What is that? One ingredient, you have firm beliefs, strong convictions, a very what we call firm center. And it almost always needs to be accompanied by something that people will read in you like crazy. And that's what we're going to talk about tomorrow. But that one thing is known very simply as the word warmth. It's the word warmth. Why do we admire people? Why is Gary Manning so admirable? You know what it is? He's got a firm conviction. He's a New Testament scholar, for heaven's sakes. In fact, he's one of the best teachers at Talbot and at Biola, and he has 11 children. And you know what he has about him? He has warmth. You would look at him and say, there's a warmth there. We're going to talk about what does that mean. So here it goes. Who and what do we admire? Who and what do we take notice of? What we take notice of and what we admire are those people who are kind-hearted and gracious. We're going to talk about that a little bit, with kind-heartedness and graciousness. This is a big one. People that are interested, not interesting.
One thing that we tell our kids, and we grew up telling them this, is that if you want to have friends, then you need to learn how to be interested in them, not interesting. We're so quick to talk about ourselves and share something about ourselves and an interesting story that oftentimes we forget that we're actually talking to someone and not just about ourselves. So we've taught them the art of being interested in asking questions of other people to draw them out, get to know them. So like if you come to our house for dinner, our 14-year-old will sit there and we actually play it. She'll say, hey, Dad, can we play that game? And yeah, let's play that game. And so what we do is we have the person sitting at the table with us, our guest. Okay, think of what's your favorite fast food restaurant, but don't tell us. And then we give them time to think of it, and then we all go around the table guessing until somebody gets it right. But it gets to, that means the guest of honor gets to be the guest of honor. And we find out, what's your favorite food? What's your favorite movie you like to go to? What's your most favorite vacation you've ever been on? But the key is to be interested, not interesting.
I think one of the things that stands out, we're giving you some of the positives, and then of course how we blow up our children is the negative, but most of the time we're talking about some cool things, like when a teacher will say, you know, your daughter's really different. She asks questions. She's been teaching middle school for I don't know how long, and your daughter, one of the first things she goes, tell me how your day's going. How do you like your job? And this teacher's like, I didn't even know how to answer the question. I'm a junior high who asked about me? That's amazing. It's better to be interested, not interesting. And then here's the idea of warm. Warm. What does that mean? We're going to talk about this tomorrow. What does it mean to be nurturing? You see, it's not good to be nurturing. We have too many parents who are warm, and it stops there. That's messed up, too. It's called permissiveness. We'll give you some examples of that. But with firm beliefs is really a cool thing. And then to love with a Christ-centered love. This is what he talked about in John 13. All people will know. A new commandment I give you, that you love one another, just as I have loved you, just as I just served you. I just washed your feet. I just loved you to the end. How do we do this? So you see, we look at people and we admire those, most of us, those people like this. And this leads to, go ahead.
Theologian Francis Schaeffer had this to say. At this critical juncture in time, we have a golden opportunity. And we're going to talk more about that golden opportunity on our last session. But it goes like this. When everything is going well and we're all standing around in a nice little circle, there's not much to be seen by the world. But when we come to a place where there is a real difference between us, like disagreements, and we exhibit uncompromised principles, but at the same time, observable love, then there is something that the world can see, something they can use to judge that these really are Christians and that Jesus has indeed been sent by the Father.
It's an amazing statement from Francis Schaeffer. It's just that idea, uncompromised principles. That's a firm center. That's what that means. That means you have convictions. You don't stop these convictions. One of our children has a friend who struggles in some areas, and for her to love this person has just been so amazing. We're just so grateful for her to love this person who is living a lifestyle that's very different than the one she believes in. And this friend turns to her a lot and talks to her and texts her, and she knows exactly what our daughter believes. But she still calls and talks and loves on her. It's an amazing thing. Uncompromised principles and observable love. What Jonathan Montanez did was observable love. You see, he was on a different team. He wasn't even on the same team. So real quickly, here's what we want you to do. You have between now and, well, tonight, I guess, and different times. There's a couple of things we'd love for you to do. We want you to talk about the way your family loves well, or ways you hope to improve. What are some things we could do better? What are some things that we do well? So at some time during your free time, if you want a question, do it this way. What do we do well? How do we love well? How might the world see? What could we do better? Is there something I can do better and different? Is there something we need to do better as a family? Or what can we improve? Or what are some things that we do really well? And then one other thing you could do over the next couple of days, you can take home this 31 Questions to Intimacy. It's back on the tables. It's 31 questions. We love it. You can take it and read it and have question time between you and your children. There are different ages, of course, that more questions are more appropriate. And maybe the new three-week-old doesn't really participate all that much. I don't know. Three-day-old, sorry. But you can ask questions of your children and of each other. It's an awesome opportunity. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're on the corner of the table at the back of the room. So pick it up. It's called 31 Questions to Intimacy for Families. And we suggest that you work through them just a few at a time. And again, some are age appropriate, so you can tweak some of them if you have younger kids. Or you can spend a lot of time just on one or two questions if you have older kids. But it will give you a great insight into their hearts, and it will give them great insight into your hearts as parents. So we highly recommend it. You probably won't be able to get through them all, certainly not today, and maybe not this whole week. But if you're looking for something for a little conversation and discussion time, this is a great way to kickstart it. So there's some on the table back here. We also have an information table for the Center for Marriage and Relationships, so stop by there. But pick up that little homework on your way out today.
All right, so as we go, just a teaser for Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, we're going to talk about three characteristics, three things that the world looks at for a loving family. And how do you do that? Well, how do you have warmth with structure? How do you have intentionality and curiosity? It's an amazing thing. That's what this questionnaire gets at. Curiosity, staying involved, staying intentional. And then ultimately, the key, we believe, on Friday, we're going to talk about what does it mean to stay connected. To stay connected here, to stay connected there, and then to stay connected with the transcendent, with community, with church. We're so grateful you're here. It is so awesome to see families that make a decision to come here, some for 30, 40 years, because you know it's important to stay connected, and that's what we'll talk about on Friday. So let me just pray for our time. It's 10:30. Lord, bless these families as they go out and enjoy and have fun. Other seminars, other talks, be with us today and guide and lead and direct us. I give it to you now and pray in Jesus' name. Amen.